was at Angle's Lot, where Webster's lived.
And, across on Government Street.
Yes, on Government Street, on the side of Government Street now, where Webster's now had their house, and that's where it was actually. Then Sweeney was that's quite the guy. And that was the sport at that time. They also played, they also had a hockey baseball team too, though. I don't remember who the players were on this ball team. But the ball diamond was down on that, it's an empty lot now, but that used to be part of where my ancestors had their vegetable gardens and so forth. You know where Wheeler Rail is? Well, on that lot between that and the school, part of where the Bell Diamond, the school is on part of the Opal Diamond.
I think that's one of our questions too. Okay, let's start, I guess. Were you born here?
Yes.
What year?
1912.
In the hospital?
No, at home.
At home. Can you remember it?
Oh, yes, I screamed like that.
And then my dad hit me. And
no, he didn't hit the Indian, never hit anybody.
Yeah, but the doctor did.
No, there wasn't a doctor.
Oh, was it? Were you told any stories about your birth?
They had midwives I don't know much there was anybody at my birth except my mother and father. As a matter of fact, I believe they were the only ones in most of all of the 12 children.
Where were you born?
I'm home, right in the house that went down. I don't think that was a house then, I think it was another house there before.
Which house?
My mother's
house. Yeah,
Between Simon's house, my brother's house.
Is that old house he had? That burned down, it wasn't too long ago?
Yes, not long ago.
Yeah.
Practically the only two-story house there was. The real two-story house that it would be, with people had attics, but not two-story houses. So it was one of the biggest houses there.
What year was that? What year?
I was born 1912.
What was it like here when you were little? Can you tell us what the changes?
It was really very nice, a very happy life, really, because there was a lot of us, in the family, and we had our friends that can come and visit us. There was a few that we were allowed to go, but not very many. We were brought up to be really strict. Really strict. Because my grandfather was the chief of the town, the village, and my dad was his name. My father was also the chief, and my uncles the chiefs. So I would be what we were, would be what they called the princesses, Indian princesses and princesses. We had to behave Absolutely. There's an Indian princess, don't do this. All prince or nothing like that. You just don't.
You had to be very respectable because of your
prince. I had to be very respectful and be very kind to give allowances, sort of. You know, this is kind of a thing. This was what they brought up. Give allowances to the one that's lower than yourself, eh?
Yeah.
They were taps, you see. So it was easy to give allowances to the people lower than yourself. So you see that. And I think of it now, it's really very comical, you know.
Uh-huh.
But that was the way they got us.
Maybe to get out of it or not, you had to give allowances.
Oh, no, no, no. We had to give allowances to the people that were lower than ourselves. So, so that was what, that's how the Indian people brought up their children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, right now.
Was it a very class society, like was there quite a few different classes?
Actually there was really, when you think, really think of it now, it's a very class society, I guess. So, but they were very strict though, with their, you know, bringing up with their children that way. And of course they became, Christians, they did have to, you know, for some, some reason or another, they had the spiritual knowledge even before they were even Christians. Even Christianity was up there, you know that much. So they, so it was very easy for the Indians to adopt Christianity.
It was,
you know, because of that, their own knowledge.
About spirituality, as opposed to just
spirituality.
Yeah, as opposed to just Christianity.
Yes.
Okay. Just what type of housing was available?
The houses like we have now. You saw the house that was burnt down not too long ago. Well, the house that we had before that was similar. House.
Mm-hmm.
It broke down to, you see, and then they built this other house that was there. So I think maybe that was how it was going in the room that was there before. I'm not sure.
Okay. Did you ever leave Haiti?
I never go on trips.
You never left there, could you?
No, never. I have no intention of leaving there.
Did you know Cat Island?
Yes, I know Cat Island.
Tell us about Cat Island. Jean-Claude.
He was, I believe he was probably the owners of the pack chain. And my father used to work for them, you see. Because my father owned horses too.
Well, what was your father's name?
Tommy Meadow.
Oh, I was thinking of William Meadow. Did you know William Meadow?
Really?
William, it's...
My brother was William Meadow.
Did you ever work on the telegraph line?
On the pack train?
Yeah, on the telegraph line.
Telegraph line?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, because I was looking at a lot of stuff in the museum, and William Meadow was mentioned. And a lot of the telegraph line stuff.
On the telegraph line?
Yeah.
Except in the hall, probably. They hauled freight. This is what one of they did, one of the things they did. Now they had, my father and brother, of course, you know, had horses, you know, they had those great big horses, not just a little guy, uses it with that. They also had a lot of those people, because my dad had this, owned some of the horses that were used in the pack train. Some other people did too. I believe Jeff Stapp did, Jeff Wilson, you know, Jeff Wilson. I believe he owned the horses that were used on the pack train too.
What about Dave Wiggins?
Yes, he was one of the workers on the pack train.
Getting back to Catalan.
What's it like? Remember looking at a very bearded, white beard. He had this up to the band to his waist. I don't know if he's
beard.
Yeah, white. Right. And the very lift. He lifts somewhere across the river. You know, they used to have a bridge across the Buffalo there.
On the fence.
And he lived across there, I believe, on the flats that are there now. It used to be quite a settlement there.
Mm-hmm.
That's where, in one of the places where the steamboat, not the steamboat part of the river, used to stop to pick, I believe, to pick up meat.
The steamboat picked up meat?
Yes, it picked up meat there.
Yeah.
It brought, you know, like dry goods and stuff that goes into the store, so. And other things like flour and sugar and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it brought. And fruit, of course. Oranges and whatnot. But it did pick up meat there.
And they would take that meat to?
To Prince Rupert or wherever it was going.
To the butcher shop there called?
Yeah, butcher shop.
Did you ever see a packing?
Yes, I've seen that one. That was a packing. I thought that one from the
they were like, were they just kind of like a big mass of animals? Or?
Oh, yeah, it was a bunch of really nice animals. They have to be in good shape to be able to pack over those mountains.
Yeah.
And my father and his brother, Bill, Inger, you call him, they both worked on the pipe train.
Uh-huh.
Charlie Clifford worked on the pipe train. And that I know. And Peter Barney, he was. Peter Robinson, he changed his name to later.
How can he change his name?
I don't know. He's, you know, I know him as Peter Barney.
Mm-hmm.
And then he changed his name, I don't know just who I was, he was married to Edmonton. Possibly if he changed his name, he didn't have to get divorced. However, he did change his name to Robinson. But they did have a Robinson in their name, though.
Can you remember any old stories your dad told you about theft rings?
Pardon?
Can you remember any old stories that your dad told you about theft rings?
My dad never talked to me about the life train. So really, no. But I do know some old, you know, historic stories that, you know, would have to be told as an anecdote.
Mm-hmm.
About the uprising, what they call the uprising. The only war that the Indians had with the white people here. It was told to me by Johnny Smith's mother-in-law and Johnny herself and his wife Emma. They tell me about these stories, you know, the uprising. This is really quite a thing. How they, you know, gathered rocks, you know, the women gathered rocks and so forth to use this stuff. That was their weapons to throw at this, the Hudson Bay thing, I guess, that they had there.
Well, the adults were just there.
It would take a lot more. The beginning of the cause of the uprising was because the Hudson Bay workers, or manager, whoever, took this young fellow out, you know, he was an only child, I guess, and kicked him out of the Hudson Bay. And who happened to be, his name is John Monroe, who happens to be a prince at that time, his father. This he was getting the door. That was before my grandfather was getting the door.
Yeah.
John Mulder's father was the brother to my grandfather, who was getting the door later.
Mm-hmm.
But they
put him out of the store.
Well,
you just don't treat the prince like that.
Mm-hmm.
So this was the uprising. Now, there have been other things that the white people had done before, which was not very nice. And I guess this was sort of build up. And so that's the start of the uprising. And for days, they packed the women gathered rocks in their aprons and bring them to the men to throw and so forth. And so that was why they called in the troops.
The troops.
I know one person who came with that troop, and that was Mr. Loring.
Edward?
Yeah. What's his name? No, his name isn't Edward. He was the first Indian agent here. Then he started up the BIA sort of here. Then I see.
It wasn't called BIA, was it?
Yes, I said the Babylon agent, they called it then, but it was the Department of Indian Affairs. You know, that was the beginning of it. And but he was the only man that I know of who happened to be a young man who came with the troops to call the uprising.
What year did that?
That's why I told you it has to be anecdotal. Yeah. I can't remember the years. Two, but still, you know.
How long did it go on?
It went on for weeks, I guess. But they left the troops there, here, and that was when Mr. Loring met his wife, who was a Mrs. Hankin, with 8 children, I believe it was. And they used to live in one of my people's place, where the Anglican church is now.
So that would have...
It had a log house there then.
That would have happened even before the Anglican church?
So. Yeah, this was before the Anglican church was built. And it was a log house where the Hankins lived.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, just why, I believe they did sell, Mrs. Hankin did sell the lot, you know, that... to the Anglican church later. But that was, you know, that's what they did. And so she had no place to go with, so her husband died, you see, Mr. Hankin. So she had no place to go with all her children. Okay, my grandfather had a log house, a small log house, where they have a garden up the Indian apartment house is now. And so he, being a very kind person, he took Mrs. Hankin and her children and put them in this log cabin to stay, because they had no place to stay.
Mm-hmm.
So when the uprising came on, you see, Mr. Loring met Mrs. Hankin and fell in love with her, I guess, so anyways, he came back and married her. But instead of providing a place for Mrs. Hankin and all her children, he lived in with them, up in the log house. And then later on, they surveyed the place there. And that's why, you see, there's Indian Reserve on that side of that place, Indian Reserve on that side of that. They call that ground land where the BIA house is.
Mm.
But Mr. Loring just simply used the lady's office there. They did build an office there later,
uh-huh,
and a house for the BIA people. And but that was where he, you know, he had his office. When the uprising came, apparently, he was not very pleased about this. You see, Mrs. Loring, Mrs. Hankin was at that time, he knew the Indians, and he knew they were not bad. And I guess when they talked or something, you see, she told Mr. Lane what was all about it, but they probably needed somebody to help the Indians, so to take the part. And that was what happened. He came and he was a baby with Indonesian.
Did he eventually build that house that had that patio on the roof?
Yeah, yes, they built that house.
Yeah. Lots of pictures of that. Do you know anything about the steamboats? When you came with their dad?
No, I can't really remember very much about the steamboat, but I do, because we're not allowed, you know, too much to be, you know, if there's any danger in that, you see.
Mm-hmm.
They, but I know that they came, and one of my ancestors had a totem pole out where, this was in front of the Anglican church is now.
Mm-hmm.
And who owned the building of the first time concealed DNA. And he had his totem pole there. It had not very much on it, but just a pole, and it should have changed the thing in the but they didn't have very much, you know, nothing on it, so you know, just a pole there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they used to tie up the steamboat.
They
just tied it to the stone pole. Yeah, they unloaded the stuff.
Okay, there's nothing on the stone pole, so look at
yeah, not very much. There was something on it, but not very much.
I think you just do actually have a large number of poles like that.
Yes,
absolutely nothing. What's the idea behind that?
The idea behind a stone pole, you have to have a feast to roost any of the eukes, they call it,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
Which is usually have a muck and so forth with it. But you have to have a feast about this before you can even put it in the barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have any other feasts, you don't have any other feasts. But the reason, some of the reasons why a lot of the poles have a yukes, or a dox would be, you know, plural. And it is because more than one chief raised that pole.
Mm-hmm.
They can have maybe three or four people, you know, chiefs raise one pole.
Uh-huh.
And that's why there's all this, a lot of stuff on the poles.
But how come there's, you get some with nothing on it?
I guess those people are not very friendly. I don't know. I don't know how they... But as I know, you have to have this beast to have used the yukes that you put on the pole. If you didn't have very many beasts, and you're the only one that put up the pole, then you have only one thing on it, one yukes sort of. So that's how this was. But anyways, the only change one of the which is like it's a box with you know, like a jack in a box sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's a box you jack out in the latest mansion, so. So
were you active in any sports?
I was a member of the softball team and I was yeah.
Is it in the way we sat there, I think?
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys go on any trips to the
well, yeah, just around the villages.
You never did any outside?
Not the way they have, maybe not the way they do now. Go to Vancouver or anywhere else.
Yeah.
We just go to different villages when there's sports day. May is usually the sports days.
May day.
May and all of May, if you have a sports day. And Kispiaks, the start of Kispiaks, usually the 10th of May, so. And Hazelton was getting asked, like you see, was the 15th of May, and then Peter Gukler and Kitten Gowers always the 24th of May, and we want that on there because they're claiming our day now the creeds. I was Dominion Day, they said, course, they changed the 24th was at the minimum daily rate. But the government has changed it now to... So... 1st of
July.
No, it's not 1st of July, it's...
Canada?
Right, the Indian, around the 18th or the 5th, but it's the 18th this year, I think.
Oh.
I don't know.
You were there?
Mm-mm.
I wonder if that's the church calendar saying they don't really care about I think they do have a minimum date on there. It was actually, should be the Hazelton day usually starts on the 15th, 16th, and usually takes 3 days. And, but they've changed it all around because the, last year the ball diamond was not ready, it was too soft, so they didn't have their days.
You mean the one up here?
Up here, yes, the good max. And so that's why they left the 15th, 16th, 17th, which is their usual day, it was left out, and so somebody else took it over. You call it the Terry Day. So, this spring we had a, what was it, a potluck supper to make peace.
Yeah. I heard about that one.
I heard about that one too.
The kids were at the kindergarten people kept saying though that it was, they used to call it the Minion Day, and you see, they call it the Terry Day on here. It must have been at one time called the Minion Day.
That probably wasn't too long ago, actually.
Mm-hmm. So, what do we call the 1st of July here?
Canada Day.
So that's how that is.
Did you have a special name for your team?
For our team? The girls.
The girls are clean and get the accents together.
That is what they call. The girls, it wasn't really an official day. But that's what they found. I was a capture on it because nobody else wanted it to the Jesus. I have the fever. There are anything you could do. The reason why they left that team broke up though, was because we wanted, some of us wanted to, we were always doing baby work and that sort of thing, and selling to raise money for our team.
Mm-hmm.
And, we have quite a bit of money, but we still have to chip in every time we needed a new bat. We didn't have any gloves. Each player has to provide their own.
Uh-huh.
And we felt that the team, now that we've got money now, should buy our gloves. At least the first baseman's glove and the pitcher's glove and the catcher's glove. And I caught without a need. Didn't go at all because I couldn't afford my and the bats, we figured that we should have the whole team should provide bats now. Instead of everyone who wanted to belong to the team chipping in every time. Which, it was a very hard chip to some of the girls. And so but our elders at that time didn't see eye to eye with this. Monday they decided to, take one out of the team of favorite, I guess, and sacrifice one to save the rest.
Yeah.
What happened to all the rest of the team would play?
That was the end of your team.
So that was the end of, that was not the end. We formed the group formed the team. Now we had to start all over again the way we did. Chip in. Start another team, which was called the Maple Leafs. So the girls turned into the Maple Leafs. And because they rebelled against the rigidness of their manager.
Were there money tournaments?
Hmm?
Did you have money tournaments or was it just the sports stuff?
See, we have
money tournaments. Like, where you win money.
Oh yes, you have, when you went to the tournaments, you won money, yes.
What kind of prize money would they have?
I can't remember now how to get it. It wasn't my interest. I didn't care whether we wanted to play ball. But not enough to pay for our expenses.
Really?
You know, because we have to we have to hire somebody to take us to the why we have to always be holding a great sales or anything to lose money.
Mm-hmm.
And, but we did have money. The girls did have quite a bit of money.
But that was their own money.
Well, the team money.
Yeah. No $1,000 tournaments there.
No. But I think they had probably about $800 by this time. We had enough money to afford to, but we could have paid for those flights and the bats and so forth. You know, so that instead of having the girls chipping in every time we needed to buy. So that was how it was. Anyways.
The telegraph thing. Do you know anything about the telegraph thing?
Jim Hatter, who worked on the telegraph line,
mm-hmm.
and
I believe Bill Blackstock did on the telegraph line. Those are the two that I know. Mm-hmm. There are other people though, because they have certain different patterns. And they had to be serviced too, by the pack trains. And so forth.
Mm, you couldn't really know too much about the telegraph line.
Well, those are the people that I know of. They're pretty nice guys.
You never had any real involvement with them?
No, of course not. Yeah, but my father was one of the people who supplied.
Mm-hmm.
You see, like, they hired their supplies out to them.
What did the people do for work here?
There was mining here at the beginning, and the logging, and there was no oil or anything like that, so it was a very good thing to cut wood and supply the wood for the people.
Mm-hmm. Do you get a certain amount of wood?
Unless they're selling by the curb, and you see all the restaurants, the hotel. Even the boat, I believe, had to have wood to keep it going or whatever. Let's see, the supply, they pick up their supply and the and so that was a good lucrative business for anybody who's got horses, of course, to hire me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the people made the money. A few of the Indians too, you know, they had a camel, you know,
mm-hmm.
Because there's always a need for supply of beef. Like my parents had raised camel and pigs.
Mm-hmm.
They used to breed pigs in this scene, and then sell their pork, you know, and just about the right size, you're supposed to find. Because they supply the butcher shop, they supply the restaurants, and the pork camps. You see, anywhere there's a group of people to eat, hey, so they supply that. So that was my mother's project, according to my father. You know, the cows, you know, my mother's, and the pigs. And so if we were up in church, and then my dad would say, so have you fed your mother's cows yet? And the horses were my dad's, you know. And so when mother checked us up whether we done the chores, you know, she'd say, have you fed your dad's horses yet? So dad had the horses and she had the cows and the pigs.
How did the people get by when there was no work?
I'm sure I don't know. I know there were very, very few people that ever took relief from the Indian agent.
Everybody usually had a job.
They had their own, yes.
And jobs really weren't that hard to find as long as they
were in the room. Anybody who's not lazy can certainly make their way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always the canneries, you see. They go to the canneries every summer and work at work in the canneries. And so they, nobody that I know of seemed to be, very hard on. As I said, there's very few of them. Kind of on my own home. Wherever people live.
Was that very much?
They didn't get very much. It really wasn't worth it. Now I remember when the couple there who had, the father had, TB and a lot of children, $9 a month is what they got. So it's not much.
Did you or anyone close to you ever go to work?
My brother was in the army. My nephews were in the army. The second,
Did they kill?
My husband was in the army.
It was eventually in the world broke out. It was the attitude of the people.
I never liked it, but there's nothing to do about it.
It's kind of acceptable. Is there much of an influx or an exodus towards the world? Did the area change much during the war?
I don't think so. Not that I noticed. Quite a number of soldiers ran the side of it because they had to guard the bridges, you know, the railroad bridges. So you see them around, but you know, just people in uniform. But other than that, there certainly wasn't. Of course, the mine, the silver cut mine opened up, and the silver standard mine opened up too, because of the war, I think. And